Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Kyle Balin. Today on the show, we are talking with Bryce Klemmer, who is the co-founder and CEO of Vodio, a Portland-based company that provides an online video platform to media companies. We are going to talk to Klemmer about the state of mobile video and how it's changing. Make sure that you subscribe to Music Business Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow the show and get the latest episodes on SoundCloud. And if you like the show, I'd love for you to rate us highly and submit a review in iTunes. Here is Courtney Harding's interview with Bryce Klemmer.
Great. So thanks for taking the time out to chat with us today. I know that you've probably got a lot going on in terms of what you're working on and your the raise that you guys just brought in, and the fact that you have so many incredible people that are investing in you and joining up on your board. So why don't you give us kind of an update on what you've been working on and the current raise and who you've got investing?
Sure. So currently what we just announced was we had just concluded a raise of $7.5 million that was led by Marker. Marker is a firm based out of New York that focuses on video media-focused companies who really are building technology to evolve those spaces. With the $7.5 million, we'll grow the team. And as a part of growing the team, two people we kind of included in this latest announcement were two very brilliant and extremely successful gentlemen from the media space, which is Yair Landau. Yair's the former vice chairman of Sony Digital, or chairman of Sony Digital, vice chair of Sony Entertainment or Pictures, and he is joined as our chairman and COO. And then actually the former CEO and one of the founders of Vivo, has a gentleman named Rio Karaf, has also joined our advisory board to help us focus on product and overall growth on the business side.
So before we get into the meat of what you guys are working on, you mentioned that you were, you know, doing a raise with a company based out of New York. I think that Rio is based in either New York or LA. He was based in New York when I knew him. But you're based in Portland, which is my hometown, and so I'm very pro-Portland bias. But Portland is generally not known as one of the big sort of startup hubs in the U.S. So what are some of the challenges and drawbacks about being in a city that's not really, you know, one of the big hubs?
Yeah, good question. And I would say it's not known as a startup hub yet. It's definitely evolved over the past 2-3 years very rapidly. Now you have companies like Google, eBay, among others, that are establishing offices right in the downtown part of the city, just primarily because the quality of life up in the Northwest is so great, especially in Portland. So for us, we've actually, since we are a tech startup and we just like a high quality of life, we were established and remain here in Portland. That said, since we're also media focused, yes, what we noticed very quickly was that most of the meetings and our potential partners are located both in Los Angeles and New York. Therefore, we needed a presence in at least one. And since raising the Series A, we've set up an office for operations and other like business development related roles in Los Angeles.
So let's shift over to talk a little bit about, you know, what you're working on. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, radio for many, many years was seen as a really audio medium, right? It wasn't, you didn't really watch radio. That wasn't conceptually even a thing for a long time. But now it's kind of shifting and becoming more visual. And as we saw today with, you know, with the Apple Music announcement, we've seen this with like YouTube channels and all these different ways that people are consuming music, the lines between audio and video blurred a lot more. So what does this say about the way that people are listening to radio and consuming music?
Yeah. So traditionally, when you hear the word radio, you think of a somewhat broadcast or terrestrial based medium. And so as technology has advanced very quickly over the past two decades or so, the way in which us as people consume content in general, so whether it's audio-based content, so whether it's audio, video, or text, those experiences themselves and the devices in which we access that media have evolved. And so over time, we're now using devices that have internet-connected screens. Therefore, within the past 10, 20 years, the things that we're able to do on the devices that we have in our pockets have evolved significantly. Therefore, experiences that were once not multisensory or interactive can now become multisensory and interactive. And therefore, for us, we have this core belief of every digital media destination in the world is going to incorporate video in some way, shape, or form. Therefore, for us, the most obvious example was music. And the reason why is because now you're accessing, well, all of us access music and listen to music every day in some way, shape, or form. The primary consumption device or device that we use to consume music has a screen on it. And lo and behold, it's an internet-connected screen. So as a result, we looked at YouTube and saw that YouTube's the largest music destination in the world and just so happens to be a video site. And figured, why not create technology that takes that official video content and integrates it with the destinations that we listen to music every day. And so as a result, yes, radio has been looked at as kind of a more traditional broadcast-based medium, but as a result of the hardware and just technology in general advancing, we believe that it will become and is becoming visualized and interactive.
Yeah, I mean, Tidal has been, you know, obviously pretty roundly mocked by different people, including us at certain points. But they did have some really interesting video propositions that maybe they didn't even sell that well. Right. Again, we've seen with the Apple announcement, a lot of what they're doing with video, Spotify, who I know you guys work with, doing a lot more with video recently. Is the future of streaming going to be built around video? Is video just going to become how we consume streaming music?
I believe so, yes. That said, in terms of use cases, so for example, if you're running or working out, you're very unlikely to be staring at a screen the entire time because you have to be focusing on the activities that you're performing. That said, when you do have the ability to actually look at screens or just have something in your pocket, it's a much better experience when you hear let's say a new Taylor Swift song, and instead of having to go open up another app such as YouTube and figure out, okay, I wonder what this video looks like, you're just able to pull the phone out of your pocket and see it right there for 30 seconds. Whenever that becomes the default experience, it'll be much, much more simple for us as users to access the content that we want to access. Because currently, the best use case is whenever we hear, let's say, Taylor Swift on your Spotify soundtrack while you're working out, you pull your phone out of your pocket and all you see is an album artwork cover. So for us, yes, we firmly believe that music specifically will become much more visualized and therefore be consumed via video long term.
Well, you definitely, I'm a runner. I definitely don't take my phone out when I'm running outside.
Sure.
If I'm on the treadmill, I'll admit to doing that. And, you know, there's also that instance where how many people are walking around the city staring at their phones and watching
right.
videos. But that leads me to sort of an interesting point. You know, I've built playlists on YouTube and then use those when I'm running. And I'm not watching the video. I'm just running and listening to the music. And a lot of the times if I'm consuming, let's say I'm watching something online and there's commercials, I'll just move away from the commercial screen while the commercials are playing and then move back to the screen when the content I want to see pops up. So is there a way for you to tell how many people are actually watching your videos versus just using them to stream and sort of having them maybe in a different tab or in a different player, but not actually focused on the videos?
Yeah, it's a good question. But I would say that this question is a much more macro focused question for not just this use case specifically, but just TV consumption in general. That's been a massive question for TV for decades. That's also been a massive question for advertisers who display video ads or even display ads for decades. So this question, the answer in short is, if a company can create some form of measurement to prove that people's eyeballs are actually looking at an ad, then yeah, that's going to be very valuable. For us, no, you can't really prove that somebody's actually focused and looking at the video at any given point in time, even if the tab is pulled up, because you never know. That said, as you were talking about you building a YouTube playlist and even when you're running, or for when you're running, it made me think of another prime example. It would be parties. So a lot of people, what we've heard, throw parties, and when they are throwing parties, create these playlists on their TVs, because now most TVs are IP connected as well. Yet generally when they log into apps like Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio on their web connected TVs, the screen's blank. And so for us, what we firmly believe that, and what we've heard from users, that would enhance the experience significantly and make it just overall much, much better for the environment that they're in, and hosting specifically at parties, would be to integrate a visual element, specifically the official videos.
Or even something where, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I've used the visualizer on a lot of different occasions, and that's been pretty interesting. But I do see a lot of people, yeah, they want something to watch, even if it's in the background. It just kind of keeps it
precisely,
keeps people's attention sort of half focused on the music and half focused elsewhere. To me it seems like there's a little bit more of a split where people are paying attention more. They're paying attention to a bunch of different things. So almost moving forward with an expectation that no one's going to be paying 100% attention to any one thing.
Well, precisely. That's the world we live in now. We have these devices that can deliver so much information to us at any given point in time, and therefore our attention spans, all of these apps, whether it's a news-related app, whether it's a music-related app, whether it's a weather-related app, stock prices, etc., everything's vying for our time, our attention, our interaction, so that it remains relevant. Overall, or just in general, the visualization of music is one of the key things that I believe will solve that for these platforms going forward.
So is there a way to make this marriage of video and content, like, to take it even further? Because to me it feels like the official videos are only the start, right? Like, they're cool, but mm-hmm. I feel like there's so much more you can do, and you can engage people to make compelling content. So, you know, A, what can you do to, you know, get people to create compelling content around music? And B, what are some of the drawbacks and challenges that would be associated with that?
Yeah, a simple example of this has been YouTube. So YouTube has allowed people, anyone, to upload a form of content. And generally what you've seen, once artists come out with new songs or new videos, you'll get these user-created videos videos that they're lip-syncing to. And so it can range from user-generated lip-sync videos to just completely new forms of content from people who aren't even official label-backed artists. That said, you know, introducing some interactive element outside of just viewing a music video could be the future. The question remains, what does that look like? And I think, you know, looking that far out, I would say the day where we're striving to go to is the day in which a music video itself or form of video content itself can actually determine the time of day you're watching it, the weather outside or in your environment, the mood that you're in, among one or two other things, and then actually adapt the video based on those factors, will be a day in which we really, as an industry, a media industry as a whole, for delivering video, I think we'll nail it.
Well, so spin that out for me a little bit, because I'm listening to you say that, and that's something that is very new to me, and I feel like I've I feel like I've heard a lot of things over and over, but that so the use case would be like, if it's, I mean, it's finally nice weather in New York now, so I'll just go with that. You know, I would put on music and it would adapt the music to be like, oh, it's sunny out, it's a beautiful day, but it's a Monday, so maybe I'm a little bit bummed out, but you know, also the news today is generally positive, so maybe we, so like, is that how it's determining playlists?
Yeah, well, not just playlists, but the actual content itself.
Okay.
So say the video itself actually evolves based on your environment.
So, so it would be like user-generated content then?
No, not necessarily, because it has to do this on the fly. So it's not a user. So say you're watching a new, let's say Drake was just on stage at the Apple conference. So say there's a new Drake video that's playing. You're watching or listening to the Drake video. That video, so that video should be able to determine, oh, I'm watching this video from a skyscraper in an office, 10 a.m. on a Monday, 80 degrees outside, and I'm in a somewhat energized mood because I just got back from the weekend and I'm trying to work. Have that video and the content within the video adapt to those factors, I think would be very powerful and intriguing from a user's perspective. And so as it, once we get to a point where the content itself can automatically adapt to the users and the environment that the users are in, we'll be in a very, we'll be delivering content in a way that's very relevant to that user, rather than just kind of pushing non-interactive content to them.
Yeah, because that's the ultimate lean back experience. Like, I can go on any number of streaming services right now and say, you know, I want music for my workout, I want music for drive home, you know, any number of things. But it doesn't really curate beyond that, and I've had to tell it to curate that. And I've seen a few things where, like, Songzo will sort of adapt the playlist they make available by the time of day. So you get the workout one in the morning, and you get the, you know, relaxing bedtime one in the evening. But
yeah,
again,
that's kind of what you see with Spotify. Spotify just came out with and recently announced alongside their video initiative was, different playlists that are curated around time of day, mood, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think that's a good
1.0. That's like just the starting point.
Exactly. That's a good first step. Once the content itself starts adapting, you know, then we're getting to a point in time where we're able to track and attract a lot more data, as well as improve the experience for the end users to a degree that's pretty impactful.
So, are there services out there? I mean, we've talked about a few of the big ones that do have video. So, you know, Spotify, the new Apple, Tidal. Are there services out there that you think could benefit from having video? And I'm not just talking about other established music streaming services. You know, are there other sort of content services out there that you think would do really well to add your functionality?
Yeah, I think virtually any media platform. The reason why, it goes back to our overall macro focus belief, which is we believe any platform that can incorporate video in the digital space will incorporate video. Just because inherently video is a much more meaningful and pleasant form of content to interact with.
It's also more expensive, right? I mean, that's one of the challenges potentially is, you know, I read a lot of newspapers and even, you know, I read the New York Times every day and a handful of their stories have video components, but certainly not nearly all of them because I think it's so cost prohibitive. So, you know, how do you sort of go about addressing that?
Two factors. One is the online video space is very nascent. And then secondly, the it's only cost prohibitive currently. And you could actually even argue that it's not necessarily really cost prohibitive because you can pull out your phone and film something and upload it and have it be high quality. For example, a lot of YouTube videos for news, breaking news events that are shared on Twitter spread more virally than most official articles that are posted nowadays. So costs of filming high quality content will continue to decrease over time, primarily because hardware over time will continue to become even more cost efficient for people and organizations.
Where do you see services like, or apps, I guess not really services, like Meerkat and Periscope fitting into all this? You mentioning the news stuff sort of triggered something in my head where a while ago, and there was an explosion in New York City, and the, you know, there were people Periscoping it or Meerkatting it within 2 seconds because it was right in the city and there were lots of people around. So even, you know, the news channels picked up those streams while they were rushing to get their news crews down there. So, you know, I feel like that's an interesting, again, trend for video. And how do you see what you're doing? You know, how does that work with something like Meerkat?
Well, so the overall question becomes, how does putting a device that's capable of connecting to the internet, neither taking pictures or filming video, impact just general news reporting and or just content distribution overall? And the short answer is, from a news perspective, it increases the likelihood of events getting covered significantly. The reason why is because if we all are walking around with these devices that can film or take a picture of anything on the corner, odds are more things that occur in the world are going to get captured, more events that occur, and therefore more of the meaningful events that get captured, people are going to continue to see or start seeing. And as platforms like Twitter and Facebook, just social media in general, becomes more commonplace and pervasive around the world, we'll continue to see this delivery of this ever increasing this delivery of more and more content that's high quality. And how does that work into what we're doing? I think overall it works into our general belief of video content's just inherently better to consume and interact with. And so I don't think it directly impacts music, although it may in some way, shape, or form, but I think it does directly impact the overall video delivery marketplace.
So I want to talk a little bit about your background, because you started this fairly young, and I think your first job was being a CEO. Like, you finished college and started a company, basically?
Yeah, that was this, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, so I read an interview where you talked about how you were sort of studying this when you were in college still. And I was just kind of, you know, curious about how you got into this in the first place and how you felt ready to come out of college and start something.
Yeah, I would say a lot of it was attributed to or because of my first job. And my first job was actually on one of the original iPhone teams. And what I saw while working at Apple and really took away from that first job was, if you can think of something that can change the world, there's no reason not to go for it, provided that there's enough data to show that it could potentially become a business. And so after really immersing myself in that culture and that environment, it kind of gave me this itch to start thinking about everything in the world differently. And therefore, as a result, when I went back to school after my freshman year, started just researching and diving into everything I was passionate about. One of those things was music and media. What I ended up learning was just key trends from the overall media industry. And two of the things that I learned was audio content and consumption online continues to exponentially increase. And secondly, is video content online continues to exponentially increase. Video content consumption continues to exponentially increase. Therefore, I became very fascinated with, okay, how do we improve the overall audio streaming experience?
Cool. And were you part of an accelerator, or did you, like, how did you come out of college and start this?
Sure. So in school, what had happened was we'd started building the technology. Once we graduated, moved up to Portland, and one of our first investors was a family friend. Then Wyden and Kennedy invested in us. And then from there, it was kind of just keep growing the team and ramping up the product and proving out the thought process and what we were ultimately pitching. So it was ultimately, yeah, we went through, so Wyden and Kennedy invested, and then we went in it to LA, and in Los Angeles, an accelerator called Amplify.LA invested in us, as well as another venture capital firm down there. And kind of that's what initially got us off and going.
Cool. Now, I mean, there's a lot of startups in the music space. I think anyone would agree with that. And, you know, it's a really crowded space. That's a really difficult space to break out in. You're not doing something that I've seen a lot of other people do, which is, I think, to your credit, you're not making another social music service, because we don't need one more of those. But,
you're referencing what Apple came out with today?
I'm referencing the, like, 20, like, music discovery services that I get pitched every day.
Sure.
I'm like, no, I really don't need that. Thank you. But, you know, so you're doing something that's a little outside the sort of typical, you know, here's another way to find concerts to go to with your friends. But you know, it's right. still a difficult space. So were you apprehensive about getting into, you know, the music world and the music industry and dealing with those people?
Not necessarily. Part of it was and has been naivety, but at the same time, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're doing something that improves the overall, the entire industry. We're not only improving the industry from a label perspective and artist perspective, but we're also improving it from an overall operating perspective for the companies like Pandora, Spotify, iHeart, Shazam, you name it. You can go on down the list. Because what we're doing is we're evolving the experiences into a very rich and engaging visualized experience so that the overall pool of total revenue earned from a business perspective increases, and therefore it solves one of the major quagmires that's the industry's kind of faced for the past decade or so. And then from a user perspective, now we're actually, we've built technology to evolve the experience and how they go about interacting with content and streaming content on these platforms. And so it's a win-win-win.
Yeah. And you also are in a nice position where you don't really need to be dealing with rights. Because I imagine that's what trips up a lot of people is going into that sort of weird morass of like who owns what and what rights you have to get. But you guys are outside of that.
Yeah. Anytime, any industry, you know, it could be for books, what Amazon has gone through for books, what Hulu's gone through for TV shows, what Netflix constantly goes through for movies. So yeah, anytime you incorporate this aspect of rights in having to get additional deals just to build a business, it becomes complex. But it's never easy. Then again, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Exactly. You know, somebody pointed out to me, I was talking to a friend of mine about what you're working on, and he said that you guys sounded a little bit like the Echo Nest for video for music startups, which is a little convoluted, but I think that, mm-hmm. you know, there's that point that you're very much a B2B play. Mm-hmm. And Echo Nest, of course, was bought by Spotify, and you've seen like Next Big Sound get bought by Pandora. You know, and I know this is very, very early days for you, but looking forward, is that something that's sort of on your radar? And, you know, what would happen then if you did get bought? You know, what happens with the other partners?
Sure. For us, I wouldn't say getting acquired is our main target and our main goal. For us, all we're about is improving the overall experience for end users as well as the overall experience, which means we improve the overall experience on these platforms. So for us, yes, being a B2B company, that's our goal in ultimately delivering the best video curated, video-based experiences to these companies is what we believe we do the best thus far. Long term, yeah, I can't speak to whether somebody acquires us, what happens, but for us, the goal isn't on that, because this space is so massive. And what I find fascinating and most intriguing about it is, you know, music touches everybody every day in some way, shape, or form. And if we can play a role in evolving how we experience music every day, that's something that's very, very powerful and very meaningful and very impactful in a good way. So I'd say in general, that's just what we're focused on, and we're working hard to make sure we do that with a handful of some of the most, you know, prestigious companies out there that deliver the content to people.
Do you also feel like, you know, part of it is that you just are in the right moment? Because I'm thinking about RDO launching Video, just similar name, but you know, RDO launched that like not even that long ago, but long enough ago where, you know, they launched it and within 6 months it was dead. I don't know that it ever even made it out of beta.
Sure.
And, you know, even in the last year and a half, we've seen a really big shift in terms of video and music. So do you think, you know, some of it is just like the timing is perfect right now?
Yeah. So for that, just to clarify that for them, well, to answer your question, yes. A lot of this stuff is about timing, what consumers want, what the trends are, et cetera. For that specifically from RDO, ultimately, I believe they were trying to focus on or build two different products to deliver to two people. One was an audio-based streaming service. Another was think of it as a Netflix or a Hulu-based streaming service. And ultimately, what I believe they found was it's very tough to try and build a great company when you're still fairly young and do so in two different areas, one being streaming audio, one being streaming like movies and TV shows. So for them, I believe is probably, or is most likely a thought process around, do we think we can compete with the Spotify, Pandora, iHeart, CBS, et cetera, of the world is on one front, and then also try and build a service where we're competing with Netflix and Hulu and HBO Go and all of those services of the world. And I think they made their decisions based on that analysis.
Yeah. I mean, this is a broader question about video, but I've heard time and time again from different people that I've interviewed, you know, oh, I wish Netflix had music.
Right.
You know, do you think that's even at this point, that's just sort of something that's wishful thinking? Do you think there's always going to be video and music, but it's not going to cross over to the realm of, you know, what people are doing with Netflix and Hulu?
Sure. No, definitely think it's a digital media platform that we access online or via IPTV. And therefore, yeah, I think it's a platform that could potentially incorporate music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's always one of the things that's been interesting to me is why Netflix hasn't ever gone into music. I mean, certainly they know how to get deals with rights holders. They've got a lot of money and they've convinced a lot of people to pay monthly for it. So I'm always a little curious as to why. Like, why do you think Netflix has held back?
I'm currently not too sure.
I mean, you know, you can speculate. Like, I don't expect you to know. I'm just, you know, curious as to if you had any theories or thoughts or anything like that.
I mean, I would say for them, it was a business that started, if you look back historically, it's a business that started as a DVD delivery service it was a more convenient version of Blockbuster where you didn't have to go into a store. You just told them what you wanted to rent. It would show up in the mail. When you're done watching it, you put it back in the mail, it goes back. And then ultimately they evolved and disrupted themselves, as many would say, even though the name's Netflix. And they turned a home delivery DVD rental service into an online streaming, fully automated video service. So yeah, I think over time, as they try to appeal to more and more audiences around the world, incorporating a form of content, specifically music and music video, that people consume every day alongside the TV shows and the movies that they watch via Netflix is a natural kind of evolution.
Great. Cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I think that's pretty much everything I had. If people want to find more about you and or your company online, where can they look for that?
Sure. You can just go to vadio.com, V-A-D-I-O.com, or shoot us an email at info@vadio.com.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Cool. Thanks. You too.
That's all for this episode of the Music Business Podcast. Thank you to Hypebot for helping us put this show out. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please send me an email at kyle.bylin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bylin@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion.